Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Now, it's time for that dynamic duo.
To the Batmobile.
Not them.
You mean?
It's Hancock and Kelly.
Well, that's right, ladies. We are a duo.
On News Radio 1120, KMOX.
Well, it's Monday, and it's Hancock and Kelly sitting in for Mark Reardon.
Mark's on vacation. Mark Reardon, yeah, he'll be gone all week.
We'll be with you Monday through Wednesday. I don't know who they've got coming in on Thursday.
Somebody good.
Somebody good signed on Thursday. And then, of course, we'll be back in on Friday, as we always are, for Charlie Brennan and John Hancock. How was your 4th of July?
I love the 4th of July. Of course, you know, when your name's John Hancock, it should be your favorite
no
holiday. It was great, man.
Did you watch the soccer game?
I did watch
How
the soccer
awesome
game.
How awesome was that?
It was great to see the American ladies win that thing. It was, I was touch and go there for a while until we had the penalty kick.
Well, they dominated the game.
They did.
I mean, it felt like the ball was in the Netherlands' end for 90% of the game. It felt like that to me.
Well, at one point, I think they were out shooting them 12-2 or something.
Yeah.
And it was a total domination. It reminded me of Game 7 against the Dallas Stars. The Blues dominated that game.
Ben Bishop kept them in.
Yeah, and he just stopped everything. But it was good. It was good to see the... See the ladies win. Did you see the news just came out here, Michael?
Well, would this be about the president and his thumbs busy going after the Brits?
Well, there's that news. That came out. He said he's no longer going to deal with the British ambassador whose cables were released. And he had said that he called the Trump administration dysfunctional and inept. The
probably an accurate description.
The president said that he's not going to be dealing with that ambassador anymore.
After Theresa May as well, saying, you know, she's really messed up Brexit, and had she listened to him, you know, because everything's just working so swimmingly in the world with Donald Trump at the helm, I'm sure she probably should have just taken his advice.
Well, he probably, if you look how our economy has been humming right along with Donald Trump's the regulatory reform that he's brought us, the tax reform that he's brought, those things have had a very positive effect on our economy. And our economy continues to be the envy of the world as we sit here in July of 2019.
Yeah, and the stability he's brought the world. Boy, just the stability he's brought the world's been overwhelming. I'm sure the Brits would love to get their advice from him. But you did bring up the question that the citizenship question will be back on. I guess a court ruled? Is that what's happened?
No. The Attorney General says that they're going to be, in the next few days, releasing the details of how they're going to go about adding that citizenship question. There was a Supreme Court ruling last week that said, and in there you had John Roberts joining the four liberal justices to say that the citizenship question did not have there was no rationale to add it that was adequate, basically. So the administration is going to take another whack at this. And clearly this is something very important to the president. He wants this question on the census. I don't see what the big deal is.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't really understand why we're concerned about the citizenship question, although it has not been on for the past several decades. Donald Trump has made citizenship a hallmark of his administration. And so the Democrats are normally going to try to be a wall to anything he wants to be able to accomplish.
I suppose, but I would want to know what percentage of our population is non-citizen. That's an important data point to get a handle on, and if you don't ask it, you can't know it.
Do you think this really boils down to the fact that in a lot of states that are blue, California, New York especially, there are a lot of new Americans or folks who are waiting to become citizens, maybe those who have been immigrated illegally.
Right.
And there would be a push by the Trump administration to keep them from filling out the census, scaring them from filling the census, which could ultimately have some huge financial repercussions to those states. Do you think that may be kind of what's driving some of this conversation?
Could be, yeah. And because if you're obviously if you're not counted, then it doesn't. You know that all but so much federal aid that's tied
is based
to
on the amount of people in a in
certainly
a state.
Congressional apportionment is tied to the population in a state is tied to the count of people. So, I mean, there are some real impacts.
And there's real consequences for a state like Missouri that's lost population. It's essential that we make sure everybody's counted because we see dwindling numbers coming for highway funding, mass transit, and even health care.
All of that is tied to the census. The census is just a massively important event every 10 years, and it informs not just our politics, but it informs so much of how this country is governed. And the analysis of census data by marketers is, you know, and people that do what we do, electing candidates, the use of that census data is just of critical importance.
Yeah, and well, the census will be right around the corner. We'll be all filling out those forms, I guess, starting in, what, 2021?
Nope, 2020, buddy.
2020?
Every 10 years, the decennial census of the United States of America
been
takes
going
place.
On since the beginning of time. We've been counting people. The Bible has a lot to do, a lot said about the census.
Yeah, they had census back in those days as well, and I, for one, think we ought to have a citizenship question on our census. I hope the administration is able to pursue this effectively.
So many of our Americans live in California, a state that, what is it, one-third maybe now? Close to one-third of the country's population?
Not that much. Yeah.
Significant. At least a quarter of the country's population lives in one state. It's a state that's rocking and rolling right now with these earthquakes. And, you know, I don't know, did you see earlier in the week, last week, there was a volcano that blew over in Italy?
Yeah.
And, of course, all of that is tied to, you know, the magma and the earth, et cetera, et cetera. And we talk about earthquakes so much, we sit here on a fault line right here in Missouri.
Yeah. Well, one of the biggest. And, you know, we don't think of earthquakes here the way they do in California, Southern California, where it's, you know, it's an event that happens on a very regular basis. But if the New Madrid Fault goes off at a level 7 or 8, which it did back in the 1800s. And if that happens, and scientists believe it's just a matter of time that it's going to happen, the effects of that thing are going to be pretty devastating.
And so much of what's happened in California is the building codes, the way that they build highways and stuff have been done in such a way to prepare to be able to negate some of what would happen as a result of an earthquake. Now, we've done some of that here in St. Louis and in Missouri. But you have to imagine we're not up to the standards that they're seeing on the West Coast.
Oh, I'm sure that's right. And, you know, it's unclear to me exactly how bad. I mean, New Madrid, Missouri, where the fault is, it's a couple hours away from St. Louis by car. I'm sure the effects here would be dramatic, but we're going to find out from an expert just exactly how bad things might get.
Yeah, and how prepared the state of Missouri is. Now, if you drive down Highway 40 into downtown St. Louis, you know, we have a double-decker highway.
Yeah.
One of, what, 4 or 5 of them in the country, and they got a special scrutiny after the Bay Area earthquake. Remember that happened during the World Series where the highway essentially pancaked on top of itself. So as a result, the state of Missouri spent a lot of time and money through engineering to try to find some way to retrofit the highways so that it could deal with earthquakes. But who knows if it's able to be able to deal with the size earthquakes we're seeing. 7.0 on the Richter scale out there in California was a substantial earthquake.
And no kidding, I'm going to be out there in a couple of weeks. I hope it stops shaking out there. When we come back, we're going to visit with Robert Herman. He's a professor of geophysics at St. Louis University, and get his take on what we might be experiencing right here when that New Madrid earthquake shakes us down to the core. That's next on The Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
St. Louis's Morning News, Total Information AM, weekday mornings at 5 on KMOX and KMOX.com.
He's Hancock. He's Kelly. Together, they're Hancock and Kelly on News Radio 1120, KMOX.
Well, and that was the case out in California earlier this week as they woke up shaking to earthquakes, which reminds us, we all have heard the stories here about the infamous New Madrid earthquake that took place, I think, in 1811.
1811, buddy. It was
7.7 quake centered in southeast Missouri. Shook all the way to the East Coast, ringing bells in Boston. And to talk a little bit about the potential of earthquakes right here in the great state of Missouri in Illinois would be Robert Herman, who is a professor of geophysics at St. Louis University. Professor, how are you?
Just fine, thank you.
Well, this was quite a sizable earthquake that we had happen in California earlier this week. If we were to get a 7-point-something earthquake here in St. Louis and in Missouri, would we be able to fare as well as they did?
I think the one big difference is that the waves will travel, or the damage area will go out to larger distances than California. California, because it's a recent part of the Earth's crust, the waves don't travel very efficiently, whereas here in the older mid-continent, they will. So if you had that same size of earthquake out in New Madrid, you could have expected some minor damage in the St. Louis area, which was the experience during 1811, 1812.
Have we seen much seismic activity from the New Madrid fault line? Of course, we know the prediction.
In this whole region, we would include southeastern Illinois, southwestern Indiana, going down the Ohio and Mississippi valleys, down beyond Memphis. So the last big shake here was 11 years ago over at Mount Carmel. I mean, that area of Illinois did a good bit of local damage and certainly was widely felt, and that was a magnitude 5.3. And those things seem to occur roughly every 10 years. So I would not be surprised if, in the next year or so, there'd be another good shake in that part of southeastern Illinois, southwestern Indiana.
Are we due for a big one? I mean, obviously, we had the big one in 1811. Are we due for a big one here in the middle of the country?
We don't really know if we're due or not. It takes a while for the Earth's battery to recharge so that you could have an earthquake. There have been investigations that point to large earthquakes that did a lot of disruption to sort of the rivers and the soils down in the Mississippi embayment, the Boot Hill, Missouri, back 200 years, 300 years before 1811, 1812, back in the 1200s. So we know that these big earthquakes do repeat, and they seem to occur on the order of every 300 years or so. So that's as precise as we can be right now, because we don't really know the real reason why we are having earthquakes. So what we can do is we can put instrumentation out and monitor the earthquakes. When the earthquakes occur, we could quickly locate the earthquakes and then notify the emergency response community, this is where the earthquake was, this is the expected damage, so that they could quickly get out there and assess the situation and help people recover and hopefully even save lives.
So, you speculate and talk to people who don't really know. The people I talk to are mostly not geophysicists, Professor. So, a lot of folks, when you're just talking casually, they say, gosh, if the big one hits, that's going to be it for St. Louis. Sounds to me like you don't think it'll be that rough.
The smaller ones are more likely than big ones. And the other mitigating factor we have is the distance from, where New Madrid is. Everybody knows that Cape Girardeau is 100 miles south of St. Louis. New Madrid's 150. Memphis is a greater distance. So the farther away you are from an earthquake, the more reduced the effects are. Certainly, if there is a big earthquake down there, there will be minor damage in St. Louis. But as you get closer to where the earthquakes occur, there will be more. So communities will be affected. If there is something down there that causes significant damage, certainly the emergency response community in the St. Louis, the hospitals, all those people will be called upon to help respond to the disaster. So that's a secondary effect, but it's certainly an important effect that affects our area.
How about Memphis? Memphis is
as close as about 30 miles from where we think the fault is. So, we can honestly say that on the basis of where the earthquakes are occurring today, Memphis is closer than St. Louis, and therefore Memphis has a bigger problem than St. Louis.
Do you think science will ever be able to predict accurately when the Earth's about to shift? I mean, is there...
Well, can science predict weather accurately? We can do pretty well in weather 3, 4, 5 days ahead. But the problem with the Earth is we don't have enough monitoring. You don't really know what's in there on the Earth. We don't really know where stresses have built up. We know that certain places in the Earth in our area are sort of primed and ready to go, and all it takes is a little trigger. And in the last 10 years, there have been actually some of the biggest earthquakes in the last 100 years have occurred in Oklahoma. And the triggering was pumping fluids down deep into the ground, and that was just enough to permit the stored up energy on the faults to move.
Is there any concern with fracking technology as it relates to...
Well, we don't have to worry about it in Missouri because we're not a producer. Arkansas does produce natural gas. Fracking typically goes into the shallower rocks, and the purpose of that is just to open up a passageway for gas and oil to flow through. What they've seen in Oklahoma is when they push the waste product, the stuff coming up is not clean. They got to clean the gas, get all the salt water out. You got to put it somewhere. You put it down deep within the earth, and they put it down a mile or two with wells, and that's where the earthquakes have been occurring.
Have state governments and local governments worked with folks like yourself to make sure that our building codes are at a place where you all think?
Well, Missouri has a state seismic safety commission, and that's part of the state emergency management agency, and they have a webpage. They sort of coordinate or are on top of all the efforts within the state. Certainly there are engineering communities that are worried about earthquakes, but in our state and other states, it's up to the local community to adopt these recommendations for safe construction. So you have sort of an overlap of rules and regulations that some communities do not support, do not require that extra amount of safety, and others do. The federal government does worry about it, and in federal construction and in military construction, the possibility of earthquakes is taken into account.
So much of our lives now are dictated by going over bridges and using electronics. Should most families have an earthquake plan? You live here in St. Louis. Do you have an earthquake plan?
Other than the fact that you would just, duck and cover and don't let stuff fall on you is about the big plan that I would expect in St. Louis. But, I'm not, ready to pack up and go camping as soon as there's an earthquake either.
Well, good. All right, Les, before we let you go, and we are visiting with geophysicist Dr. Robert Herman from St. Louis University, our old buddy Ivan Browning, remember him?
Of course.
Ivan Browning predicted that the New Madrid Fault was going to have a big one on December the 3rd, 1990. I know that because I was married on December the 1st, 1990, and arranged to be out of the country when the earthquake hit, which, of course...
But he never claimed that he could predict, but certainly the implication was that he could, and nothing happened.
Nothing happened, yeah.
So I think the importance here is that we be able to continue monitoring the earthquakes. The seismic network that St. Louis University has been running for 40 years is going to be transferred away just because of the cost. So, monitoring earthquakes is an expensive business. Certainly, there is a lot of effort in Southern California because what they're trying to do is to give a few 10, 20 seconds of warning before the big shaking occurs. And they can do that because they've got the infrastructure and they've got the support.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your expertise with our listeners today. That's Dr. Robert Herman, a professor of geophysics at St. Louis University. With Michael Kelly, when we return, Mr. Soccer, Bill McDermott's going to be in talking about the Women's World Cup victory for the United States. That's next on KMOX.
Baseball's All-Star break is underway. The Cards return to action Friday against the Diamondbacks. For all the All-Star news and everything Cardinals, it's America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
Well, after our fourth World Cup win for the women, this happening this past weekend, we are joined by Mr. Soccer, Bill McDermott. Mr. McDermott, welcome back, sir.
Mr. Hancock and Kelly, how are you?
Good, sir.
Great.
Has there ever been a more dominating tournament by any team ever in world competition than what we witnessed these women do this past last month?
I don't think so. On the women's side, certainly not. You could argue that the 1999 United States winning team, remember that game at the Rose Bowl, over 90,000 people, probably the biggest moment in U.S. women's sports ever. That was in the United States. But the game has advanced so much since 1999, just in 20 years, not just on the women's side, the men's side, World Cup. Everybody in the world is playing now, and everybody else is playing better. And that's perhaps one of the themes of this past World Cup. And that is, the United States had the more difficult side of the bracket. They had to play more difficult teams, teams that are consistently getting better in international competition. However, as they are also getting better, so also is the United States. And the United States, starting way back in 1991, they had a big head start. And consequently, it still shows that the United States, going into this World Cup, they were ranked number one in the world, favorite to win the World Cup. And they still, this is running the risk of being tremendously jingoistic, but I'm running the risk of saying that they're clearly the best team in the world right now on the women's side of things.
Yeah, yes. There's no doubt about that. And a lot of people thought that this team and a lot of its supporters may have been a bit arrogant throughout this process, saying that, hey, they were going, you know, you, no doubt about it, you're the number one team, but you haven't won yet. Boy, they really drew a line in the sand and showed them that they were.
They most certainly did. I think perhaps one of their youngest players, if not the youngest, Rose LaBelle, said, you know what, we're not invincible, we're not arrogant, we're just confident in our abilities. And no matter what first 11 they put out on the field against, again, difficult competition, Spain, France, England, and then the eventual final against Holland, it all seemed to work. And it seemed to work extremely well. I think one of the points to look at is what Jill Ellis said, the coach, after the 2015 World Cup, in which she said, this is a real short, condensed tournament. As a matter of fact, this year, the United States had to play 7 games in 27 days. Every game is not going to be a masterpiece, a thing of beauty. Sometimes you just grind it out, use your grit to substitute for the beauty of the game. Get out of there, play your next game. Well, they did that on some occasions. They believe they did have to grind it out on some occasions. But usually, and pretty much throughout the entire tournament, their style and quality of soccer was better than the other nations.
Yeah, and it just looked like they were better athletes. You know, watching that final match, they looked to be faster and stronger, and they outshot the Netherlands. It was crazy. I don't know what the final shot count was, but it was very lopsided. And they just dominated.
Yeah, very much so. And every aspect of the game, especially late in the game, where they not only showed that aspect of their play, that they were superior as soccer players, but they were certainly better conditioned. And in a tournament where you, again, have to play a short amount of time, a lot of games, a lot of important games, big games, short turnaround periods, very little time to regenerate and prepare for your next opponent. I think that they showed that not only were they the better soccer players, but also they were more physically fit entering into the final against Holland.
One of the controversies that has arisen through all of this is the and I guess everybody in the soccer community knows this to be the case, but many of us were just learning about the discrepancy between what the women's team is paid versus what the men's team is paid. First question, why is that discrepancy there? And second, is somebody going to move to fix it?
I think indeed they are. The United States Soccer Federation has said to the Players Association, as a matter of fact, during the World Cup, when the World Cup is finished, we will indeed begin to sit down and talk about this and properly mediate it. I think it has something to do with the fact that the a large amount of it has to do with the fact that the World Cup for the women has only been around since 1991. For the men, it's been around since 1930. And it's just a more recognized sport for the men. I mean, let's face it. many countries, England banned the sport for women from 1921 to 1976. Germany, Brazil did too. Many of these countries simply said, they had the audacity to say that soccer is simply not a women's sport. Well, nothing could be further from the truth, and especially that case is 100% accurate in the United States, where it's always been a huge sport for women playing.
Yeah, and it seems to me with women in America dominating world soccer that it should be something that we could lead on. And speaking of, as excited and as energetic and as sure that we are about women's soccer, boy, the men seem to always let us down. We don't make the upcoming World Cup. We lost last night to Mexico here in the United States in the Gold Cup. Are we closing the margin of talent worldwide with the other countries, or does the United States, as it relates to men's soccer, continue to languish behind?
Well, you know what, guys, to continue on one of the themes I just said a moment ago, when everybody else, including the United States, is getting much better, so also are the other countries. Portugal, Italy, Holland, Croatia, Germany, Argentina, Brazil, and they had immense head starts. The men's team, their golden generation of players was 2002, when they advanced to the quarterfinal of that particular World Cup. This current edition, yes, you have to get back to relevancy. When you do not qualify for the World Cup within the CONCACAF region, where you have normally in the past been one of the stronger teams, that is indeed cause for concern. Now, the United States did indeed lose to Mexico last night in the CONCACAF Gold Cup final. They had moments in the game where they played very well, sometimes better than Mexico. But in that 15, 20, 25-minute gap in the second half, beginning of the second half especially, Mexico showed that they were a better soccer team than the United States. So I think the task at hand for the United States national team is to, A, number one, requalify for the World Cup, and to be patient with Greg Berhalter, the new coach, to see what he's going to attempt to do to do just that, and that is requalify for the World Cup.
Bill, you're a guy who follows soccer at all levels. As it relates to men's soccer, are you starting to see some of the best athletes go towards soccer rather than football and basketball, and is that potentially the pathway forward for us?
Without any question, you will see some superior athletes, and some of the best athletes in the world do indeed play the sport of soccer. And you will see, again, continuing on our theme here, that every country is getting better. For example, Croatia, a very small country, gets into the World Cup final last year in Russia. So some of the better athletes around the world in these respective countries do indeed, not all the time, not 100%, but certainly are going over to the side of playing soccer. And a lot of it has to do with the international pride of being able to play on a soccer team and carry that banner for your country. In some of these smaller countries, that is the only way they can express their nationalism, to show that they are equal with some superior soccer-playing nations. Just to get into the World Cup is a feat for some of these countries.
There's no doubt about that. We are visiting with KMWAC soccer analyst Bill McDermott. Real quick, we got just under a minute left, but I wanted to get an update on where we are getting that MLS franchise in St. Louis. Any update there, Bill?
The only update I can give you, because the league is playing this very close to the vest, hasn't really said anything, but usually in conjunction with the MLS All-Star Game, the league has been legendary over the start of the league in 96. They've made announcements of significance in conjunction with the All-Star Game. That this year is July 31st in Orlando. They didn't want to do anything close to the Women's World Cup to conflict with that. So hopefully and ideally, somewhere within this window, July 7th to July 31st, we might be hearing something.
Well, let's hope for good news. I think there's a lot of expectation here that it's going to happen. We've been visiting with Bill McDermott, KMWX's great soccer analyst. Bill, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks, John. Michael, talk to you soon.
All right, we need to step aside for a minute. I wonder if the listeners out there are concerned about the way women are being paid for soccer in this country.
I hope so.
314-436-7900, 1-800-925-1120. You can weigh in after this on KMLX.
Get home fast and informed. Total Information PM starts weekdays at 4 on St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX and KMOX.com.
Hey, Hancock and Kelly both fighting for women to get paid equal on the soccer field. You're for that, aren't you?
Well, you know, I think you need to have a little bit more information to see what the
it's
the sponsorship
money is.
It's
international competition. It's all for sponsorships. Why should the men make any more than the women?
It's really, you're paid based on the revenue you generate. So I would be surprised if the women aren't generating more revenue in sponsorships than the men are. And if that's the case, then yeah, we ought to pay them.
Let's go to the phone lines. A couple of you wanting to get in on this. We shall start with you, Dan. Dan, you're on KMOX.
Hey, guys. That is true. It's about sponsorship. The ratings for the women's compared to the men's is substantially low. I'm told it's about 10%.
Really?
Unfortunately, based upon, I mean, that's what I'm told. Now, I could go fact check it, but it's going to be significantly less. And the thing is, sponsorships is what pays for this, and it's eyes on the dot, you know, eyes on the TV. If you're going to pay them the same, you're most likely going to have to subsidize it. Now, based on performance, they should be paid more because they're a lot better than the men. But you can't pay more than, you know, not for long, you can't pay more to somebody that generates less revenue.
All right, Dan, thank you. Well, I think the argument is they ought to be paid the same.
Well, I don't. Where does that come from?
U.S. soccer? Is U.S. soccer pay their athletes the same?
Jason, you're on KMOX.
This is a really ridiculous argument that you guys, I don't even understand why it's being discussed, that you don't get it's only based on the revenue.
Right.
That's all that it is. That's all that there is to it. So is it fair to take money away from the men just to, like, okay, say we're equal about this? And, you know, we shouldn't be talking about this issue today and after that event. They shouldn't have politicized this event. Dropping the flag, taking a knee, you've diminished the accomplishment.
Why do you
you've
care,
diminished
Jason?
Your skills.
Why do you care?
Thank you, Jason. That was Jason.
I don't understand why people care how others want to express what their own feelings. That was our team that went out there and won. We support them.
I'm all for them. I'm just saying that you can't to arbitrarily say we've got to pay this athlete the same amount that
USA
we pay
soccer.
That athlete.
The same sponsors that come in can go in there, and maybe there are sponsors who give more just for the men's program. Then U.S. Soccer ought to equalize it. It should be throughout.
Well, you can't just create money. It's not the, not the Federal Reserve.
If they
for
take
the
in $10 over here and $5 over here, you got $15 divided up. 7575. We go now to John. Is it Tom?
It's Tom. Tom, you're on KMOX.
Hey guys, what's going on?
Yeah, you know, what's just living the dream, Tom.
I understand. Hey, I kind of agree with both the first two callers. It comes down to revenue. If it doesn't come down to revenue, I mean, if there's something more to it, somebody said that, I guess it was more than likely Mike said that, I think that the women are as good as the men or better. No, that's not true. The American women's team played better in the World Cup than the men's team. But as far as the sport of soccer, obviously the men are better. It's an argument that, as the last gentleman said, there really is no reason to have it. They should pay what they earn, and that's all about what the sponsors will pay.
Yep.
Right. And my argument is that for USA Soccer, John Hancock, they take in total revenue on an annual basis.
Yeah.
Every couple of years they have the Women's World Cup. Every couple of years they have the Men's World Cup. None of these folks are making their primary living, except for the women, a lot of the women players, but not the men, off of solely playing an international competition. Equalize it. Equalize it across the board. If you're a sponsor of USA Soccer, you're not going to be the sponsor just for the men or just for the women. You contribute into the bigger pool, and all those players make an equal level. Why not? What's wrong with that?
Well, when you get Bernie elected, maybe you can make that happen. Mick, you're on KMOX. Last word.
Hello, gentlemen. Rush Limbaugh had a nice commentary on the show right before you. It's based on revenue for the World Cup. He quoted this year at $74 million for the women in revenue, including all advertising, gate, merchandising, everything else.
Yeah.
In 2010, for some reason, he used that number. The men's World Cup brought in $4 billion. The men get 9% of the gross revenue. The women get 13% of the gross revenue.
All right. Well, so, Mick, thank you very much. So there you have
it,
Michael.
Philosopher Rush Limbaugh has weighed in on this. Of course, everything's got to turn political. Isn't it interesting that the Republicans want the women to make less and the Democrats want the women to make
more?
It's
such a hostile media. I mean, it's just, so sad.
It really is sad. I mean, why are we just equalizing it? They're both out there representing our country.
There you go. Let's get rid of performance bonuses too. While we're at it, people make what you make what you.
I got another hour with you, don't I?
Can't wait. Coming up, hey, we're going to address the crime problem in our city. Michael Kelly and John Hancock in for Mark Reardon. Mark will be back with you all on next week, I guess. And we're in with you until the lovely Wednesday. And then Thursday, who's coming in Thursday? Do we know? We don't know yet. We'll let you know as soon as we know. Stick around. Next hour coming your way right here on KMOX.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.